Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Guys, Ryan Sprague here from Somewhere in the Skies, and welcome to a very special live stream tonight. If you've been paying attention on our social media, you know what's coming at you tonight, especially with that intro. We are going to be reviewing John Carpenter's The Thing from 1982, a movie that I admittedly have never seen. And both of our guests tonight, two of my closest friends and colleagues, couldn't believe that. And a lot of you couldn't believe it either, but I finally watched The Thing. What did I think of it? What did they think of it? We're going to get into all of it tonight. So without further ado, I only have them for a limited amount of time. So we are going to get through this thing and it's going to be a lot of fun. So thank you for joining us, guys. Without further ado, let's bring them in. We have Nicholas Westermeyer. We have Andrew Sanford. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome. Thank I can't you. Believe I have you both in the same digital room. This is the first time we've done this since, I think, the found footage one last Halloween.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a while ago. So I know Nick and I did Halloween recently, which was, it was okay. Movie's very controversial, I guess, for many horror fans. But this one's going to be a lot of fun. Alien-themed. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of our audience is going to dig that, but let's get into it, guys. What is your history before we even get to it with this movie? Have you seen it? When was the first time you saw it? Nick, let's start with you.
So I actually was kind of like you. I didn't watch this movie until Halloween. So because I miss both you guys and especially Andrew at Halloween time, I started just watching horror movies because I was at home working. So I was like, oh, I haven't seen The Thing. And my brother's like, 47 years old, so obviously this is like this is peak him, right? Like this is one of his favorites. So I was like, I gotta watch this movie. So I first time I had seen it, I loved it. I had a lot of thoughts about it, but I thought it was just brilliantly executed, except for one thing, which I'll bring up later.
Ooh.
We'll get there.
One story.
Andrew, how
one
about
story
you, buddy? Thing. Okay. What's your history with this movie?
I did not really go on dates or hang out much in high school. I spent a lot of my time going to the Best Buy in my local mall on Friday nights, buying a couple movies and heading home. And I particularly remember purchasing this one. It was a special edition DVD that was like when they actually used to care about like what the box was like. And I remember watching it and being absolutely blown away by what I ended up seeing. I apologize if you hear my children in the background, but they're great, so I don't super apologize.
They're awesome.
So I saw it relatively young, and it's been a real favorite of mine ever since.
Sorry, no spoilers in the chat.
J. Allen Heineken says, no spoilers. J. Allen Heineken, this might not be the time to watch this, man, because we are going heavy into spoilers tonight. That's what these movie reviews are for. I apologize, buddy, but go watch the movie, come back and watch this. It'll be here forever. Now it's now on the internet
in perpetuity.
Yes, exactly. Cool. All right, well, that's cool. I just saw this for the first time a couple days ago, and then I watched it again today, so it's wonderful. Fresh in my mind. I'm ready to talk about it. I'm such a professional. I have a slideshow.
You've come so far, Ryan, so far in these things.
Don't you love it? I go all out for these movie reviews. I should probably be doing this more for the actual Summer in the Sky show. But no, I love doing this. You guys know.
My birthday present.
Exactly. Yeah. This is like the other side of me that a lot of the people who follow my work don't really know about. I'm a screenwriter. I'm a playwright. I'm a huge sci-fi nerd too. And I love movies. So I really do like going all out for these. As you guys know. So why don't we just go through the quick history of this. This is from 1982, John Carpenter, directed by John Carpenter, written by Bill Lancaster, music by Ennio Morricone, who was mostly known for Westerns. So we'll talk a little about that. The effects were by Rob Bottin. I think we're going to be talking a lot about him tonight, who worked with Carpenter on The Fog and is known for the effects in The Howling as well. 23 years of age at the time when he made the effects for this movie.
Wow.
Doesn't that make you feel like, what the hell was I doing?
That's impressive. That's yeah.
Woof. That being said, he was a little in over his head with this movie. And they had to call in someone to come help him with the effects on some of the scenes in this. And who was that? None other than Stan Winston came in to kind of save the day on a lot of these effects, too. So, a lot of people worked on this movie, which is really, really cool. Let's get to the cast starring Kurt Russell, A. Wilford Brimley, the diabetes guy.
Yes, thank you.
TK Carter, David Klenning, Keith David, who I love, love, love. I didn't know this. Andrew, you might know this. Keith David narrated the entire Monday Night Wars series.
Oh, yes. Yeah. He
for WWF.
Mm-hmm. WWE. He did a few of them, too, I think. There's a couple DVDs I think he did narrations for them for, because
his
you just need that voice.
Stellar.
Yeah. It's incredible. I when I was watching Monday Night Wars, I recently rewatched it. I'm like, that voice sounds so damn familiar. And then when I looked it up, I'm like, yep, there it is.
Yep.
There it
is. He voiced, because again, children, Frog, the Princess and the Frog. He was the main villain in that too, wasn't he?
Was he?
I think so. And also, I think in Mass Effect, which I'm playing right now, replaying. I think he's also one of the voices in that.
Okay.
In which one?
Mass Effect, the cat.
Oh, nice! Yeah.
It's like stellar.
He's also Gargoyles.
Oh my god! Gargoyles. Yes.
I tried.
David is like, I don't use the term legend lightly, but he's a legend, and he's also this is his first of at least two Carpenter collaborations.
What's his other one?
They Live.
I've not seen
with
that movie.
That's iconic fight scene with Roddy Piper. Another, I knew we would get enough wrestling references into this episode. and what's really cool too is this entire cast, except Kurt Russell, I didn't know this, were all stage actors prior to this.
Oh, interesting.
Which
you kind of get that, you know, from the feel of this movie. Yeah. Let's go through a quick plot synopsis before we dive into the actual movie, guys. In remote Antarctica, a group of American research scientists are disturbed at their base camp by a helicopter shooting at a sled dog. When they take in the dog, it brutally attacks both human beings and canines in the camp, and they discover the beast can assume the shape of its victims. A resourceful helicopter pilot, played by Kurt Russell, and the camp doctor, Richard Dysart, lead the camp crew in a desperate, gory battle against the vicious creature before it picks them all off one by one. That's the official plot synopsis on IMDb. I think that covers it pretty well.
Yeah.
No.
Let's see. History of this. Let's just get to that.
Well,
I did my research. Amazing. You know, this is a remake of 1951's The Thing from Another World, which Carpenter was a huge fan of. It's based on a 1938 novel, Who Goes There? Which actually Carpenter stayed more faithful to that than the actual first original movie. Toby Hooper was originally at the helm of the project, but ended up leaving, and that's when Carpenter was brought on board. What else? The entire cast, like I mentioned, were stage actors, And last but not least, and we'll get to the end of the movie, obviously, but Universal Studios wanted a happy ending when they filmed it, but Carpenter refused to put that in. We'll get to that actual ending in this review. Let's do it, guys. Hello to everyone in the chat. I need to just get through this, so I'll try to put your chat up. Guys, if you really want me to see them, put them in the super chat. Help out the show, and we'll be sure to shout you out here
super
in
chat,
this
super
review.
Chat,
super chat. Did I say suple?
No, super. I said suple because I can't talk. That's training right there.
Speaking of which, I'm drinking a winter warmer beer from Bedfordshire. I thought it was appropriate for tonight.
Okay. I'm drinking a Blade and Blow. Blade and Blow. Yeah. Because, you know, whiskey in this movie is heavily relied upon.
J&B, yep. What do you got?
A pomegranate cherry, Canada Dry.
Ooh. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Going all out, buddy.
He's the responsible going parent in this group. Out.
Whatever. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
I've got some of the behind the scenes images here too. If you're watching this on YouTube, this will be an audio format too. So, in that case, we're doing a lot of visuals tonight, guys. So
cool. Look at that sweater.
Audio, go watch this YouTube version right now. The sweater. I know.
Where, Carpenter in the bottom left. Like what a looker, man.
Where was this filmed? Where did they film this? Like the actual set.
So, they filmed a portion of this in Alaska. Okay. And I've got a clip actually that I might play of how miserable it was filming. Oh, so they actually did go to Alaska.
Brilliant.
Dude, amazing. Brilliant. And then they also shot on a soundstage in LA. You see that lower image there of Kurt Russell where he looks like really sickly and frozen.
Right. Mm.
The soundstage, they actually put the temperature down to like I think negative 10 or something to keep them in character and make it like actual freezing in the soundstage.
Right, right, right.
So again,
that's
they
brutal,
went
man.
All out for this thing.
It's one of those things where those kind of those kind of stories, I feel like got romanticized for so long. And like, look, I think the results are like undeniable of how great this movie is. But man, the idea of somebody being like, look, don't tell the actors, or maybe do tell the actors what they did, but just crank it down. Crank the temperature down. Crank it right down. Make sure I want them to know they're cold. But John, they're actors. They're going to act. No. I want them freezing.
Andrew, I shot a horror movie where I did a scene. It was in Ohio. If any of you are from the Midwest, you know that Ohio in like February is just fucking brutal. And we did that. I had to be shirtless in a unheated warehouse. And I can tell you, that's not, at least they had coats. Cause like, holy shit. It's not good. No. Like Nick, all the pain is real. It's just real.
Have you been in a movie where you weren't shirtless?
Why would I ever get cast in something I wasn't shirtless in?
I swear to God, every movie this guy's in, they're like, can you take your shirt off? Hired.
Listen, you just gotta pay the bills, buddy.
Yep.
I get it. I get it, man.
Know your strength.
It is what it is.
know your talent. My talent is
unbundled. The myth, baby.
And then
we
die.
Can all only aspire. I know. Yep.
Nips awesome. The hips or we ain't eating.
Oh, there's the group. There's our group photo, guys. Our whole crew.
They're so happy.
Isn't that? They look so happy.
So
before
happy.
This starts. Let's talk about the opening scene. First of all, the actual opening scene, which I'm going to be honest, I didn't really dig. We're in space and a UFO is flying to Earth.
Oh my God! And I know you hate those things.
Yeah, UFOs.
It completely. I don't know. It wasn't what I was expecting this movie to open up to. I just wanted like a shot of like desolate Antarctica. That's how I wanted this movie to start. I have a feeling that opening UFO coming to Earth was definitely like not a John Carpenter choice. I could be completely wrong. But I feel like they're like, we need to establish aliens are coming to Earth. So let's literally show the UFO coming to the planet. Which I don't know. Am I wrong on that?
You do because you see the UFO later. So it's like, I mean, it's there and it is, but like, it's not necessarily, I think, a shot that's needed in terms of establishing story.
The only reason I would say yes, keep it, is because yes, we do see that ship later, but that's a while. Like it's a while before we get that information. And I do think it kind of at least gives you I think we see this a lot in other story, because a lot of the TV shows, movies, and things like that have ripped off this story ad nauseum at this point. Technically, this is you could call it a ripoff or knockoff or whatever. But the idea of finding something under the ice, I don't mind them almost immediately clarifying, like, hey, this thing isn't from here. Because I do think you could easily have that other, almost even like confusion of like, well, has this thing been here for a while? Whatever's attacking them, has it been here a while? Is this like something that they unearthed that's been hiding or something that's new? What I will say, like, I could understand there being some confusion in the fact that we don't find out until later that that spaceship was landing millions of years ago, I think they say. Like, it's pretty. It's pretty
10,000.
Or 10,000. Like, it is established that whatever it was has definitely been here for a while, but it's not from here. And I do also think that that opening could be looked at more as like a nod to the original film that Carpenter loves so much. So like, you good know what point. I mean? Kind of entering
got that B sci-fi movie feel.
Yeah. And it also is just like, it's like, look, he does something vastly different, both in tone and not vastly different in story, but tonally, especially, and the way that they portray the monster. So I think it's almost like him going like, hey, you know, I still love that other. I love that other thing. I love
like,
the other.
Like you said, paying homage.
Yeah.
Thing
that comes yeah.
Good point.
Like, you know, as far as like an establishing image goes, the story is about an alien being out in the middle of nowhere. So they show us an alien out in the middle of nowhere.
In the middle of nowhere. Good
it's
point.
It's so funny. That's fair. I agree with all that. It's just, I'm so basic. Like, and again,
no,
I have
to, it's not.
No.
There's no right or wrong way to watch a movie.
I'm going to own my basicness in this. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying I'm basic. And I'm like, because I know these movies age. And so the practical effects in this, I'm sure we'll talk about, are so fucking good. Like, they're so good. And they have, this movie made me again appreciate practical stuff, as I always do. Like, but that was like the one scene where I'm like, oh, that didn't age well.
No.
But I know, but again, I know that like that's just a product of, which is why I said it's basic. It's a product of just what it is.
Sure.
But in totality of all the effects in this movie, it's always like that shows up. I'm like, oh, because the practical of the ship in the snow looks great. Like I know
the sets on this are pretty good. Feel lived in and real. And
yeah. I mean, even the helicopter stuff. Like since we're kind of the beginning, like I love. It's funny how much you forget what that looks like as a viewer in watching movies, like to see an actual fucking helicopter, like them using a real helicopter as opposed to something that is digitally altered or CGI not real. Like you feel it, all that grittiness and realism built this world really quickly. And I forgot how much I missed that watching movies, like how much I miss real shit in a movie.
To be fair, sir, Marvel does get all their military equipment real because they do not take any shots at the U.S. military whenever they portray them in their films.
I did not.
Never. Oh, look, you're seeing some real stuff because it's being loaned.
Well, I'm just, you know, you guys finish this review. I'll peace out.
Bye.
Hey.
No, you're not going anywhere. I think...
To your point, like I'm just being a jerk. I think you're 100% right, and it's tough as well to play slightly devil's advocate because I've also been I was watching Andre. I don't disagree. Yeah, nothing beats practical effects, but it does come to, and this kind of gets into the idea, the conversation we were having about the temperature, messing with the temperature. Is that sometimes we're growing to a certain point where it's just like, if this movie were to get made now, the dogs would probably be CG. Don't think that's a huge problem. And I think it comes down to what would you prefer, that you see a dog on screen when there's supposed to be a dog on screen? But you know that dog probably did not want to be there, has no idea where it is, got shoved into a truck when it was done and taken home and taken to another set the next day. Or are you just happy that, like, oh, it's a CG, it doesn't look great, but No animals were forced labor on anybody.
I wonder if it would be both, though. I'm one of those things where, like, I wonder if they'd go the Del Toro way, where it's like both, where you get a real dog for those things that aren't like super intensive, well, and then CGI, because that always is what I love the most. But
well, let's talk about.
But you're right, Andrew.
We could talk about the dog for 10 hours. Probably the best actor in this.
That dog fucking killed it, man.
That dog deserves an Oscar, right?
They do. And if you give it like joint, like him and Richard Mazur, who we're seeing in the picture right now, the eventual president of SAG. For a while, he was also in. He has a great turn as Stanley Uris in the It miniseries from the 1990. Yep.
That's who he is. Thank you, Andrew.
Yes, I know he has that face.
He's great. Well, he's like, that's a journeyman's actor if there ever was one. But
he's fantastic.
But his chemistry with those dogs is so wonderful, and he's probably the most like the most tragic character of the whole film.
I know.
You'd have every reason to believe that it's him that's been turned into an ad. No.
It's not. He's literally one of the only ones not. We'll get there. Let's talk about this dog. The movie opens. This helicopter is coming in. It's trying to shoot this dog.
We don't know why. Really poorly. Shots.
He missed like 10 shots. I know. Yeah. And to the point where he's like, screw it. I'm going to throw grenades at this.
Which also this poorly. Dog.
Yeah.
And we don't know why, which I love. I love this idea that like, okay, why is this happening? What's up with this dog? So we come to find out, you know, the helicopter that was chasing this dog eventually crashes. Pilot dies. The guy shooting at the dog gets out. He's speaking Norwegian to our Antarctica group here, this Navy research group, and they have no idea what he's saying. And he starts shooting at them. They shoot back and kill this guy who was trying to kill the dog. And then that's kind of where this all starts to unfold. Our dog, you know, wrangler here takes in this husky. Clearly it's traumatized because it was just being shot at, and it becomes grenades. And they take this dog in, probably the biggest mistake they could have made. So that's kind of our opening of the thing here. We've got the UFO coming to Earth, and then we have the scene with the dog. Who wants to take it from here? What comes next? What stuck out to you next?
Yeah, well, next we kind of meet everybody at the facility, right? Like we kind of get.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. Yeah, we got like 12 different guys.
Yep.
How do you think they did? Well, we've got 12 guys stuck in the middle of Antarctica. How'd they do character wise?
I think they did. I think everybody gets a nice little establishment. Everybody feels different enough that you can track everybody, which is really key with dog was actually Daniel Day-Lewis. when you are, you know, trying, because you're trying to be quick here, like you want to get everybody to know everybody, but you don't want to linger too long. You definitely want to connect with everyone, but then you want to get and cold angry man. Everybody's killing it in the comments right now.
That we got some good comments.
Yeah. Everybody's doing a great job. I think the character work is really strong, and I think it's why the movie stays endearing throughout. And you get Kurt Russell getting an incredible introduction where he's drinking and playing chess and is losing to the computer chess and then just destroys it as in response, which is really just gives you what you need to know about him for the rest of the movie right off the bat.
Absolutely. And you kind of get the impression that, you know, these guys have been here for a while. We don't really know what their research is, but I almost don't
not important
to. I just assume, as many do, that we always have people military involved up in the Arctic doing weird science shit stuff. We know sciencey stuff. The U.S. has a presence there. Canada does.
That's where Space Force is located, and that is not a joke.
I'm learning like so
Greenland.
Much today.
Yeah. Because it's. I think it's more like Greenland, but I guess that kind of it's Greenland.
That's North Pole. I mean,
yeah, but Space Force is up there. It's basically like to keep an eye on
space
missiles.
Space and forces. Yeah.
Something that with these characters that I felt really strongly, and again, looking at like time, is it felt, again, I agree with Andrew. Like, I think you get a really good establish of, they establish all these people really well. And I think that one thing they do successfully is that everyone's kind of a character, like an 80s caricature. Like, I was like, oh, I've seen all these characters in an 80s movie before. Mm-hmm. If I'm watching Dawn of the Dead or any of those movies, like, it's very, it feels very similar and not in a bad way. Sure. Like, it allows me, it allowed me to be like, okay, I know who each of these guys are. Like, you have like the stoner guy. You're like, oh, he's the stoner guy. Mm-hmm. Copy. Got it. You got Kurt Russell, who's like the, like, anti-hero hero guy who is fed up with where he's at, but he's going to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. But I think that what Carpenter does so well in this is gives you those characters, but you like all of them,
sure.
which is what I liked about the Dog Trainer. Like you said, like for him, that character is one I was just like, oh, you like him immediately because there's this very different relationship with the different people in that camp. Or like the general who like nobody likes, and you can tell off the bat, nobody fucking likes him. I just feel like it was a good use of stock characters in a creative way. Like they could have been less than they were. And Carpenter does a good job at like building that out. So you feel for, or so you clock, which I'll get to later. So you start clocking each of these people. Cause there are 12 is a lot of people to fit into, like to cram into a movie like this.
Sure.
Right. And I'm not going to lie. Like they started to kind of blend together for me. Like I did get confused on who was who at certain times and whatnot. But I think that kind of plays into this because you've got a quote unquote alien, a thing that assimilates or I guess becomes these people. So I think that kind of plays to the aliens' benefit, you know, that we don't really see a ton of character in each of these individuals because right. then they eventually become quote unquote the thing. And it almost makes it more suspicious to figure out who's who because they don't have these very specific character traits. So when they're acting a little weird, we're kind of like, that wasn't like the person I saw in the beginning of the movie. They're clearly the thing. I don't know. I could be totally wrong on that.
No, but again, I think you're balancing
a huge cast.
Well, it's a huge cast. I think a lot of that plays into the acting as well. And like, look, they're not like Power Rangers. It's not like each person wears a different color, or it's not like they're, you know, they're all dressed similarly. They're all reacting to things in a similar kind of way, which is panic. And I think they're also, they've been there long enough. There's a lot going on. And I think it has to do, I think everything that you both have brought up are like great points about them, and they both work in the positive, which is that we want to know these people, but not know them too well, but know them well enough that we can tell them when they're acting strange, but also maybe not be sure that they're acting strange. Cause like, exactly. Oh, maybe they're just a lot of that is tension and tone, and it's the acting and it's Carpenter. It's a lot of things working at the same time. So I think it's, you know, I think you guys are nailing that on the head.
I also might be looking too much into this, but I feel like this movie starts off immediately with questionable decisions. And what I mean by that, and this is where I'll get to like my plot thing, the fucking general, the main guy, the main like military dude, older guy, breaking the goddamn window to shoot his gun. I'm like, you are in the middle of the Arctic and you're breaking
his fucking window. Not the best choice. Yeah. But like, there were some, like,
there's some choices going on with this thing. And I'll get into it. Like, we're like, that to me is like a theme, like people making not smart choices, but not smart choices.
Mm-hmm.
But what would you do? You know, like we have the you know, the benefit of being in our nice little cozy apartment. Not break the window. Apartment.
It's freezing fucking cold.
Yeah, but you don't have someone shooting at you, Nick. Come on, man.
Just let him replace that window. It'll be great. It's easy.
I know what you're saying. I get it. Well, let's kind of get into, okay. So Norwegians. They're, you know, we don't really know.
Yes, please, let's get into Norwegians, finally.
Let's break down Norwegians.
Oh, man.
They're dead now, and we don't really know what's going on. We adopt their dog.
You will if you watch the prequel film that came out in 2011. Thank you very much.
We're not going to watch that film. Yeah,
we'll get there. I've got a little tidbit on that. So the dog... they put it in with the other dogs. They got a bunch of dogs here at this research facility to, you know, live with his own. And this is where the movie just goes to 100. They put the dog in this little canine cage with the others, and immediately best acting again I've ever seen from an animal.
The slow this dog, walk, the dog terrifying. Like slow walking in is fucking great.
And the other dogs start barking at it and growling because they know something's up. And then we get our first kind of
monster
John Carpenter moment. Who wants to describe?
Well, at first it goes into the room, right? They have the little moment where it goes into the room.
It sneaks in the room. Oh my god! You don't know who's in the room. You just see a shadow.
Good.
And what's fun about that too? And I could be wrong on this, but if I remember correctly, for that particular shot, they use like a key grip. Or somebody just so you like
yep.
yeah, they purposely
so nobody could recognize him. Yep.
Yes, they use a shadow of somebody who was not a cast member in the film. Oh, Andreas, we're so sorry, buddy.
So we sorry. Meant nothing.
Norway's
by it.
Great.
I love Norway.
You just can't. You're just not here shooting from helicopters.
Andreas, what would be a Norwegian cuisine that I could make here in the U.S.? Get back to me when you get the chance. I'm trying to cook other kinds of foods lately, and I don't know what's I think there are the I don't know why I'm hijacking the podcast for this. I don't know. There are certain, like, if you go to, like, you know, Mexico, I'm going to try tacos, or if I'm going, and even that sounds more basic than it actually is, or like certain regional foods. I don't know what there would be in Norway, but I would love to know.
Can I get a Norwegian?
Oh, never mind. I'll finally try it. I like fish.
Hey, what about Norwegian bake? Because I like baking. So bakes, give me that.
I think you bake lutefisk. I think that's baked. Like,
is that baked? I'm on it.
I think it's like a bake. Andreas, I'm
what the hell is happening here?
I think that lutefisk, and this is based almost entirely off of an episode of King of the Hill that I love, that lutefisk is not only a Midwestern Minnesota kind of delicacy as well, but it is like fish that you bake like a casserole.
This is going to be two plus hours when we do
this. I know. This is it. We don't have the time tonight, gentlemen.
Look, this movie's like perfect. What are we going to do?
It's a perfect film.
I'm trolled on my own show. All right. So, despite Norwegian cuisine, what do we think of this first kind of Botine special effects we got going on where the dog just gets... destroyed.
It's fucking great, man.
It is great.
It's incredible.
It is paced really well. Like, just with the transformation, it is horrifying. Like, one thing I love about all the it transformations, like the just like texture of it, the like wet, like goopy, like so you're sucked into this thing that's happening, and you're just both horrified and disgusted in the way that it should be. I feel like, oh. Like, you feel bad for the dogs, but you're like, what the fuck is this thing going to do? It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it literally annihilates these other dogs.
Oh, man.
It's really sad. I knew going into this movie that I was going into a quote unquote, like, kind of body horror movie. But I didn't know to what extent. And I was eating chili. When I was watching this.
Wonderful. No.
Wonderful.
Biggest mistake I could have made. I'm not exaggerating when I say, like, I almost threw up. It was the first time I've watched a movie besides Hereditary when the scene.
Hereditary, did you throw up?
Almost at the head part.
And a question before you, were you a parent when you watched Hereditary yet or no?
I was not. No, not yet.
Okay. Just I'm letting you know.
Yeah.
That shit real. Like, that happened. My wife was upstairs and I was like, oh, shit! She's
sure.
That was the only other.
I had a hard time watching Clerks 3 last night, so I'm already.
It gets worse, dude.
Oh man, that so one. Nice. Well, that one. I mean, Clerks 3 is heavy.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Oof. If you haven't, I think Clerks 3 is great. I really enjoyed it, but it's heavy. I watching horror with kids now. I have a, if anybody wants to, I write for a website called Pajiba that I love, PAJIBA. And if you look up, like, if you do Google, like, Pajiba, Andrew Sanford, Child's Play, I wrote a piece about watching Child's Play for the first time.
Did he mean to say that? I'm sorry.
I don't know.
Sorry to distract you, gays.
I
think he meant guys. I don't know.
Watching Child's Play as a new dad was the first time that I felt specifically affected by what I was watching because of having children. Which, and I have purposely not watched films that I usually watch. For instance, like Pet Sematary. That being said, I did listen to the Pet Sematary audiobook in October. So I was, okay. So I'm still steeped in there a little bit. But dog guts. Getting sprayed on. That's another thing, man. Those poor dogs didn't want to wake up that day and get sprayed in the face or whatever the fuck they were spraying in their face.
It's nice to see CGI back to your initial
ASPCA announcement of the night. Yes. But I know.
But
I
it
know.
Is. It's incredible. And it's it what's great too is it is, and this is the case with the monster. All we know about it is that it can mimic and copy other people. We don't know how it does that. We don't know, like, we do learn at a certain point that it's at least on like a very base, like molecular level, because they can even tell if it's like, if it has recreated your blood, because it would have had to do that. So there's like, there's something very like, it is what is going on is beyond our human perception. And because of that, it frees the movie of doing too much exposition. It allows us to stay firmly in all of the main characters' POV, which is very effective. So we feel confused by what they are confused by. Nobody has all the answers, which ratchets up the tension, except for Wilford Brimley. But the having all the answers kind of makes him go nuts, you know, like, which is very, it's very Lovecraft in that way, the whole movie.
That's a really good question. Something I thought about watching the movie, because I was trying to track like when people get infected, if you even can, right? Which I know is very ambiguous. And I was wondering, so I was like, is Welfare, is he infected from the beginning? And the breaking of the, we're skipping, he starts doing like all the analysis, right? Like, how long will it take, the likelihood of someone else being infected is 75%. How long will it take for the world to get infected? It brings those numbers up. And so the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, he's running these numbers and he freaks out because he realizes like where this is going to go. But then rewatching it, because he clearly, spoiler towards the end, is infected, right? I was like, well, shit. Is he infected then? He's doing the numbers of how long it will take him to do this, which then explains why he starts breaking fucking everything.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Flips out.
Yeah, I was like, I could be wrong, but I was like, well, maybe he already is. Maybe that's a choice he's making. I don't know.
The only reason I would say no is because I don't think it's an infection. I know where your head's at, and I think that makes a lot of sense, what you're saying. But because it gets down to the fact where if they – like when they test their blood and they find out who is actually infected or who is taken over or a recreation, the blood moves like it's its own organism. So by the time we are seeing a version of them that is the thing, they are no longer them in any semblance of the word. Now, that being said, I can see what you're saying because they still talk and act like them. So it could be within that thing's nature to say, I am pretending to be this guy, so I have to keep freaking out. So maybe I'll just say this stuff.
And you never see when he gets taken. Like, that's the other thing. I was just trying to talk, like, when he gets – he's in this secure room. Everyone's inside that building, which I'll get to in a second. But all of a sudden, he is, like – he's it, man. He's, like, building fucking ships and, like – and so I was like, man, is he this monster even into that autopsy? Because like I was thinking about the autopsy and the dude's hand gets fucking cut off, but like during that autopsy he's taking shit out and he's very chill about it, like this thing isn't alive. And I'm like, well, man, maybe he's an alien and that's the long game. It starts there. I don't know. I'm looking too deep into all this.
No, I honestly think it's a fair question to ask, and I think what's kind of fun is they're almost isn't an answer. Like, there's Schrodinger's
this
cat.
Is
like
the beauty of the script. Again, what was the scriptwriter's name? Bill Lancaster. I love that everything is so perfectly paced in this movie. Mm-hmm. You know, like I had some issues with overall story, but like script wise, the pacing, and that has a lot to do with Carpenter too. The way scenes are set up, you have these fade outs, in this movie, which you didn't see a lot in movies at that time. That was a very old school kind of technique of using fade outs.
You have to transition. Homage for the original, like the homage.
I think it was. They did that too in the original. Mm-hmm. But I also think it sets up like these are little scenes playing out. So the minute you kind of are comfortable in a scene and trying to figure stuff out, it fades out. And then we're thrust into the next scene that's about to unravel. Sure. And figure out who is the thing and who's not. I do want to step back a little bit here with you guys before we move on. We got to talk about when they actually, so they retrieve these videos from the Norwegians and it shows them, you know, going to this site where this craft was, this UFO. And they actually go to it. And this is where they start to figure out, whoa, okay, something's messed up here. There's a bunch of, you know, just crazy, crazy shit going on. They end up getting this creature or person that they bring back to the research facility. And this is kind of where things really get batshit crazy, in my opinion, where we start doing the autopsies and trying to figure out what's going on. Brimley, like you mentioned, is doing this autopsy, and I love it. Because he's like taking out these human organs and whatnot, and he's just going,
He's so good, man.
He's incredible. Like okay, his first of all, guttural reactions.
How old do you think he is?
Why would you wear a mask? Why is no one wearing a mask during this bullshit? I would not want like alien shit flying in my mouth. I don't know.
No gloves, no mask.
No, just like reach in there and pull that shit out. Boom.
He put it. He put a pencil inside that guy, and then put the pencil behind his mother effing ear.
Oh,
like, that's how much he doesn't give a fuck. Yeah. So again, that kind of plays into like, oh, he doesn't care. Like, is he a thing already, or is this just the way biologists worked back then, very haphazardly. I don't know.
I'm sorry. I need to ask, how old do you guys think Wilford Brimley is in this movie? No looking.
Like 45.
I'm going to say, I'm going to say like 40. I'm going to do the prices right. I'm going to say 46.
Fuck you.
Okay. Well, I'm actually kind of annoyed because, right. I think it's like 48, 47, something like that. So,
I gotta be honest. The only reason why I guessed lowest, I read because I was reading about him. I'm like, is that the Quaker Oats guy?
Gotcha.
And then I started reading like that he was in some movie, he was cast way older. He's like the youngest of all of the cast,
but
he was cast way older. And then he was like a rodeo person and a blacksmith. That dude had a crazy fucking life. Go look him up. It's worth the time.
Yeah. Wilford Brimley is the man.
I was like,
he's awesome.
I was like, is that the diabetes guy? And I was like, oh, he's the Quaker Oats guy too.
Mind blown. So, I mean, we don't have to go through the movie beat by beat. I know we don't have a ton of time, but okay.
May I mention a moment real quick before
we
get
it? Please.
Because it might actually be favorite scare in any movie, specifically because I remember the moment that first time I saw it. I'm sure I'm there's no way I'm the only person that thinks this, maybe not even on this podcast, but the defibrillator going down I think it goes down like once, maybe twice, and then goes down again, and the man's chest opens up and bites off the hands of the person coming down with the defibrillator. It sees pound for pound, one of my favorite practical effects ever. I think it still looks amazing. It's so perfect at the point of the story that it's at because it, talk about like the through the looking glass kind of moment. Like from that point on, like that's when it starts turning it like with the dude's head coming up and it's shooting up into the roof. Like everything, it's almost like the monster keeps hitting a reset button on what we know about it.
Right.
Which just makes it even scarier. And it's, just love it. All of this. Ugh, just incredible. Incredible, insane stuff.
It's so fucking cool. The other moment with that, because I agree, Andrew, like, I love that part. The other moment I love, like, with effects that is a little bit simpler, but not when you think about it, is when the dude's fingers go through the guy's face.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. I just, like, every time I watch him, it's like, oh. Yeah. But it's so fucking well done.
Yeah.
Like in how long you see it, all of it. Sorry.
It, It's amazing. No, I was going to say a little bit of trivia. I just found this out today. The scene where, you know, the defibrillators go inside and the stomach eats the guy's arms.
Oh.
They hired an amputee who didn't have arms.
Really?
And they threw a mask on him. So if you pause during that part, you can tell it's a mask. But in the moment, you have no idea.
Amazing.
They actually hired a guy with no arms.
That's brilliant filmmaking.
That's great. I always love they did that. One of those for the remake of the Zack Snyder and James Gunn's Dawn of the Dead movie, where there's somebody with no legs.
Love that movie.
Yeah, love that
movie.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Okay. Well, I mean, we could talk about each body horror moment.
If we're here,
it's kind of a good example, right?
If we've jumped to kind of these parts of the movie, can I please tell you my one issue with this movie? My one issue with storytelling this movie, where I was like, God damn it, guys. So, you know, like at this point in this movie, you're like, okay, there's a fucking alien floating around that's going to like kill us, right? And it looks like us and it acts like us. Why would you let anyone ever not go in parties of three? Like, there are people floating around by themselves. There's people floating around in parties of two. I'm like, my first thing is like, first of all, stop drinking. Number two, parties of three. Always parties of three. If you have to go anywhere, no one's going fucking anywhere. And they're just like, they're like, Kurt Russell, you can go to your shack. It's cool. Go to your shack. Go get some, go get some ice cream. Take one person with you. And I'm like, well, if there's an alien, he attacks you in the shadows, you're fucked. So why are we not in parties of three all the time? Parties of three. I was like, you're all stupid. Everyone in this camp is stupid. Stupid people.
Sorry. Again, I understand it. I the only defense I have is like, we weren't there. Like, decisions are poorly made. Every one of them at some point make a poor decision. And I think that kind of is a testament to the situation, the isolation, the paranoia. Mm-hmm. Like everything is so uncertain to a point that it will drive you crazy and you're not thinking logically. And of course, we have the helicopter pilot who kind of becomes the leader in all of this when it should be Wilford Brimley, in my opinion, who goes.
Unless he's already an alien.
Exactly, and they end up putting him in a shack and saying, like, you're on your own, buddy.
The shack with the fucking noose, noose in shot. I was like,
and then he's like,
guys, there's a noose.
And then he's like, hey, I'm okay now.
I'm not the thing. I think that's the best. That's the best acting in the movie.
I'm good.
Oh my God. Another moment, probably my favorite moment in the movie, is when Wilford Brimley's character is shooting at one of the other guys and he runs out of bullets, so he just throws the gun.
Yeah, that's great.
I saw that. I thought there was an old SNL skit where it was like Superman and they're like shooting Superman. He's like, ha ha, ha. And they throw the gun at Superman. He's like, whoa. That's all I can think about.
It's those moments. Like, there are some moments of levity in this movie, again, with the spider head part. Probably the most iconic moment in this movie, in my opinion, when the little thing is like skittering across the floor.
Sure.
And we get the famous line, as someone pointed to in the chat there, like, you gotta be effing kidding me. Like, this is where we're at. I love it that Carpenter put those in there. And there were a few others, I think, in the deleted scenes. Like, you know, the big question in this movie is, how come there were no female researchers? And like, take of that what you will. This is a movie in the 80s. Like,
I didn't even think that. I'm a bad person.
Yeah, like, maybe people were thinking, oh, there's one woman there with like 11 other guys. Ooh, blah, 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 blah.
I could honestly see that being against military regulations at that point.
That might be. You're probably right, actually. But apparently there's a deleted scene where what's his name? Kurt Russell's character, McCready. He finds a blow up doll in one of the guy's rooms, like a sex doll.
Nice.
God, I wish they kept that in there.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, that would have explained so much.
Right. God, I love the thing. I love it so much. Like, I love it. But you know what? It doesn't have, a sex doll. And I would love the movie so much more if it had a sex doll.
I need parties of three, but I need the sex doll. That's where we're at right now. Andrew sees it as a perfect film.
Someone's going to clip this audio and be like, all right, it was a sex doll. Thanks. Someone's my
fault. The Kathy comic is always her going like chocolate, ack, and with Ryan's it's sex doll. Ack.
Oh my god. What am I doing?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Okay, so we have all these scenes where, like, no one knows who's the thing. Maybe a few people, maybe none. Who freaking knows? Everything's all flipped upside down. And that bottom right-hand corner image you see there is probably my favorite scene
so good.
In this movie.
So good.
Where MacReady decides to tie the remaining people to, you know, these chairs. And even the dead people he tied up, which I think is hilarious in the back there.
Well, someone's getting their hands bitten off, so it makes sense to me.
Yeah, good point.
Isn't it? Yeah, and also the defrosted body they bring back is also like part of it.
Yeah,
right? That was it. Yeah,
so yeah.
They're not fucking. They'll go in groups of two, but they're not fucking around with the people.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I also, because I think it also speaks to like the maybe why they don't always travel in groups, because they don't trust each other so much that he's tying these people down. And it's one of those things where it's like you understand that impulse, but it also gets those people killed when the shit goes down. So it's wonderful. Yeah.
Andrew. It takes every fiber of their being to like even like be loyal to one another in the tiniest of ways, because they just don't know. And that's the tension that just kept my anxiety going this entire movie. And it was so incredibly paced. And then you get to this scene where MacReady's like, all right, shit, like, I'm done. We're testing blood. We're going to figure it out. If you're one of these things, I'm burning you to death, and we're going to, you know, figure this shit out. And this is probably my favorite part of the movie, honestly.
It's
no music, nothing behind it. And he starts testing their blood one by one, and literally every second. And again, this is my first time watching it. I had no idea what was about to happen.
Yeah.
I will never have that luxury again, but even watching it a second time, my anxiety is still there. Oh my god.
Yeah, dude.
Of him testing each person's blood, you can hear it. You can hear like he's using this little electric shock thing to see if like the blood reacts.
Heat it up away. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just the tension. I've never seen a scene like this in a movie. Maybe in like a Tarantino movie, but other than that,
it is one of the best pop scares because it's such a underrated pop scare that you're not like, because like, you didn't know. Because again, even watching it, like you watch it the first time, you don't know what's going to happen when he nails the blood, and to have it like explode in that way, it was for the thing I love about a lot of John Carpenter films. Like even if you look at like the original Halloween, is that like he doesn't build it on pop scares; he builds tension, which I love. And I think is really, really effective. And in this movie, tension and like claustrophobia and tight and being those tight quarters. But like if he's gonna do a pop scare, it is simple yet really effective. I think about the hand hitting the glass in the first Halloween movie inside the car when he escapes, or this, right? Like when he touches that blood and it blows up, and you're not, because you have no idea what that reaction is going to be. And I think it is, in terms of a building tension for that moment, it's really well executed. Yeah. Which I'm just saying, everyone knows that John Carpenter is a fucking master of horror. But
well, and before we go any further, I do want to bring up what Grant Lavoc is probably one of the biggest Kurt Russell fans ever. My buddy in Australia, who's in the chat here, he clearly loves this movie as I do too. Now I'm a huge fan now. He brought up the AIDS epidemic, which actually, in terms of like social commentary, was a big thing when this movie came out. Sure. And I think it does play into it a lot, this idea of something, you know, spreading and you just don't know who has it. And everyone was paranoid. We didn't know.
Like,
was it
blood.
Was it transmitted? Could you get it from coughing on some? Like, you just don't know. So I think that that's... And I think that played against the movie, actually, and why it did so poorly when it came out. We'll get to that later on. But I do think the AIDS epidemic played a big part in this, whether it did subliminally or like on the actual surface of the Burt Lancaster writing this script. I don't know. But you can't deny the parallels between those two.
I think we were just talking about this. I'm a college professor, too, for context. But like we were talking about this in a meeting. Like whenever we teach art, right? You teach theater, teach art, you teach like anything within, I mean, really anything, right? When you're going in to teach, like you can't separate. It's really hard, I think, to separate traumas of the world that are going on, right? So like if we're looking at this film, like whether that's purposeful or not, like that is a real trauma that is happening at that time. So like you can't take that stuff out of context. Like people always will contextualize what's happening. And so when you talk about this, like I think about, a friend of our, you know, Ryan, you know, Wayne, like talking about living in New York City in the 80s and walking down the street and seeing people dead, right? Dead of AIDS. Like they die on the street in the village or in like the Lower East Side. And so I think that's a really good point. Like you can't separate those things. Just like I think for us, right, as we watch things, like I was watching The Last of Us, right, or my wife and I were. And they talk about like the funk. Did you not like it?
No, I loved it. God, no, that
we
was
should talk about that when I haven't seen it yet.
When that show's done, we should talk about that. But
good stuff.
But the intro, without spoiling, the intro of that show literally talks about like they're talking about pandemics, right? And I think if you had not lived through a pandemic, you'd be like, oh man, yeah, that shit's scary. Because the game was made before the pandemic, and so but now that we've lived through a literal pandemic, you're like, oh fuck yeah, yeah. Exactly. And so I think that like you're right, like the AIDS aspect of this, whether it's purposeful or not, like that is a thing that people are dealing with in a very real way, especially like when you think about like who's writing and acting, people coming from New York and LA where a lot of this shit is cast, right? And dealing with this stuff in an everyday type way. You can't separate those things, right? You really can't. And even I think about watching this film in a modern sense, living, you know, going through what we've all gone through. Like that still plays in, right? Like what is like a sickness or like who is sick, who isn't sick? Like, is it a cold? Is it COVID? Is it, like all these unknowns, like that's so fresh to us now, as a culture that I think that you can't pull those things apart, whether it's intentional or not. Like it's always, it's always there. It's baked in. It's baked in trauma, I guess.
Baked in trauma.
That's so, that's the most academic thing I'll ever say in your podcast.
Thank you, Professor Nick. I love it. Well, I guess let's kind of let's get to kind of the end of the plot,
video game,
quote unquote. We'll get there.
It was a great
so like, you know, we have the famous, you know, the thing we're seeing more and more of the thing as more and more people die. And then we finally get to, I guess, the final moments where, you know, MacReady is like, we got to blow up this whole place. Like this, we have no choice. This is the only thing we can do to stop it from spreading. We're blowing up the base. So
we're all going to die. I think he says we're all going to die.
Pour our whiskey into the computer, maybe.
Yes, exactly. So him, Childs, who we haven't really talked about a lot, because he is very unassuming throughout the film. We kind of see him as having a really good relationship with MacReady. And you know, they have a moment of tension, I think, at one point, but they have
a couple moments of tension.
Yeah, they definitely do. Like, you know, it's all a dick measuring contest at a certain point.
It is. They're
the two tough guys,
exactly. And him and a few of the others go down into the, you know, the basement of the place where, who was it that was kind of planning this big, was literally building a new spaceship?
It's Brimley's character.
Yeah, that's why I thought he was a fucking alien from the beginning. Yeah.
He's trying to build a spaceship. I don't know if he, what, like, is he
out of old parts, out of the old helicopter parts and all that shit.
Yeah, which is the most unrealistic part of the movie, I think, but also hilarious. But so they see this, and then we get the final moments of the
most unrealistic part. A dog sprays liquid on another dog and becomes that dog.
That's scientifically sound, Andrew. Yeah. I checked the science before we got on
here. This is somewhere in the skies, Andrew. That shit is is actually in the Pentagon paper. Yep, yep. Liquid dog.
Know your role there, buddy. Yeah, that's that was factual. So our final characters start getting picked off, and we finally kind of see the thing in its big form. I don't have an image here, but guys, go watch the movie if you haven't. It's pretty grotesque, and we're kind of left with a final showdown between MacReady, our helicopter pilot, the hero of the film, and the thing.
That monster is very moist. It's a very moist monster.
Very moist.
It's a moist monster. Very man. It's moist. Been down there. It's sweaty. It's you know, it's got a lot going on. and that's when MacReady decides, all right, just going to blow it all to hell. And we get these final moments, right? Am I missing anything?
No,
we'll get to the very last scene because that's the oh god, I have so many thoughts on the actual ending.
I love the tunnel scene in this movie. I think, again, we talk about like another really tense scene of this film. I think the dog, so we like go through like really well constructed tense scenes. The first dog, the dog cage scene and dog walking in, that happening, the autopsy scene, the first one, the second autopsy, like the hand ripped off scene, bite off scene, the blood scene, and then the tunnels. The tunnels, I feel like the way that's shot and the way it's paced, it's so both frenetic and built. Like, you know, you feel that climax coming, and you're just waiting to see, like, how is this going to unfold? Because now I always get this feeling they're out of their element, right? They've gone, like, the buildings are their element. Like, they understand that. They understand the space. They've lived in it. And when they leave that and go underground, now they're leaving their environment, their turf. And I think you feel that really distinctly as they try to like set up this explosion. I think that's really smart too. They take them out of their environment into a brand new environment, even though it's the same place.
Right.
Which I liked a lot.
Interesting. I want to thank Arik very quickly here, Ortiz Film. Should the Among Us movie just be the Thing remake in space, since Last of Us is very Walking Dead?
Oh, can I do another shout? Eric, he is a filmmaker I've worked with. That dude is awesome. So if you get a chance to check out his work, you should. He's a good dude.
Awesome. Well, thank you for the super chat, Arik. I'll definitely have to check out his work. Thanks for being here, man. Thanks for checking us out. Hope you'll become a subscriber. Subscribe below. I had to do it. Sorry, guys.
We know what this is.
Okay. So, Andrew, take it, man. MacReady blows this shit all to hell.
He blows it up, and then he's left with Childs. And I think we already got the question in the chat, which is whether or not Childs is an alien or if he's normal, which I think somebody said it could be answered in either way. I personally think no, and I will explain why. Two things. We're going very base with it. By the time it's just the two of them, the alien has no reason to remain Childs in that moment or to have it be the kind of tense, quiet moment that it ends up being. The other reason I would say no is because I think it goes against the themes that are being established in the movie, particularly when it comes to trust and how humans especially can often get in our own way when it comes to trusting people down to our own detriment. And I think that happens several times throughout the movie where you see if people would have just calmed down and talked and not turned on each other so quickly, or maybe tried to trust each other a little bit more, things wouldn't be as bad. I think the true poetry of the movie would be that these two humans are left together. Both of them are fine.
But the trust is just not there, so they freeze to death. And I mean, they're going to freeze to death anyway, but there's not even any solace that they're going to die together as the last two humans. They just kind of die bitter and afraid and alone.
This is the most nihilistic ending to a movie I've seen, and it was up there. Perfect. These are the last lines in the movie.
Best well, line what is, just, let's just sit here for a minute.
Yeah,
you know what the line is? I thought that I think it's fucking great, and you're just
wait
like
here for a little while. Yeah. See what happens.
Oh man!
When I saw that, I'm like, oh my god! I wish I could write an ending like that.
And then the thing, and then that credit, and then like that's the other thing in terms of good editing and filmmaking. And then boom, the thing. I just like it ends on such a nice period in a way that I think is just like you're like, oh, it hits you, and you're like that, yeah.
Period is, I would agree, Nick, but clearly the franchise of the thing didn't think so, because we actually got a,
we got a sequel.
We got a prequel.
What's the sequel?
Sequel's the video game.
There was a video game, Nick, let's talk about this for just a moment, that came out, where, you know, the U.S. military comes to figure out what the hell happened here. And then it kind of unfolds from there. Yeah. Clearly something lived on, something of the thing survived. And then we see the military fighting the thing. And that's the game. It's a first person shooter game. It's actually
third person.
Oh, it's third person.
There might have been a first person one that came out in conjunction with the prequel movie. Okay. Don't quote me on that. But this one was third person. I had it on my PS2. I actually played through it twice. And both
isn't times, that good?
The ending was is it very good? Difficult. Super good. It was a lot of fun. I'm not sure how it holds up now, but one of my favorite things about it, especially at the time, was there was a mechanic where you would basically be collecting team members kind of as the thing was gone on, because you would be going through, and it's the game is really good, Eric. You would be like collecting team members, and then having to like, they could end up getting like too scared, and you had to have to try to calm them down, and you would calm them down by like giving them a gun, or like trying to give them a pep talk, or like trying to give, like you would give them like a first aid pack that they could hold on to. So you'd be trying to like earn trust from the people on your team. And then you could also test people's blood if you weren't sure about them. And there was a big, you had a big emphasis on using like flamethrowers to fight a lot of these things, which is a super fun mechanic. And now I never got to witness this myself, which is kind of because I remember both times I played through, there's a moment in the very end that I just could not get past for whatever reason, and did not have enough space in my memory card to attempt it enough to actually PS2 might not PS2 have memory cards, doesn't matter. I couldn't get past it, but at the end of the video game, when you succeed and get helicoptered out of there, you are picked up by someone who helps you escape, and then introduces themselves as being Bear McCready. So in the world of the movie, at least in the video game, he did survive.
We should mention too, John Carpenter, he has said that this video game is unofficial.
Really?
Oh, cool. Well, you know what? I'm there for it.
He fully supported the game, and he said, I'm all for this story playing out.
Before we dive into the I will say, I think I have to get going, unfortunately.
Oh, absolutely, man. No worries at all.
I can hang out for a little bit longer.
Okay, thanks, Nick. Hey, Andrew, before you go, buddy, I got to put this up. First of all, very happy birthday to you guys.
Happy birthday, Andrew!
Yesterday.
Thank you.
Celebrate. Tell us about your short film before you get going here.
Short religious horror film called Pay the Tithe. It's about two couples who go to celebrate an engagement out in a house in the middle of the woods, and then a wounded priest arrives and starts turning everybody against each other. And as he does, his wound begins to heal. Very proud of it. I wrote and directed it back in November of 2021, and we premiered at the Atlanta Horror Film Festival back in October. We'll also be at Pensacon in Pensacola, Florida in February, the end of February. So we're out there still waiting to hear on some other dates or other festivals and things of that nature. And then we'll eventually get it online so everybody can see it at their leisure. But if you're in Florida near the Pensacola area, we'll be at Pensacon. I think it's like the 24th and 25th.
Andrew, before you leave, I was very lucky to both read this script and get to see an early cut of it because Andrew is a lovely human being. It is incredible, and it is beautifully done and executed. And so kudos to you, Andrew. And if you can see it, it is – check it out. It is worth every minute you watch.
Thank you.
Yep. I had the pleasure too. So
thank you both.
Check it out, guys, when it becomes available. You can follow Andrew on Twitter, right?
Twitter at Sanford Minus Sun. I have Instagram, but it's private. So
Andrew's the only
reason. Unless you know me, don't worry about it.
That's fair, buddy. Yeah. Any final words on the thing before I
love it. Find the video game if you can track it down. I'm sure you could probably find an emulator of it at this point. Watch the movie if you can get it. I think there was a whole thing that Mick Garris was talking about in 2022 because I think Fathom Events did something for the 40th anniversary, but the screening did not look good. So if you're gonna go see a screening of it someplace, make sure you're watching a good one. Apparently, don't do Fathom Events or do. Sorry if you work for Fathom Events. And I love the thing, and I've never seen the prequel. You guys can fill me in later, but I just know one of the dudes from Dumb and Dumber is in it.
Yeah,
one of those dudes is from where I grew up, so I don't know which one though.
And so the one I'm thinking of was also in an quite a few episodes of Community. He's funny. He's perfectly.
Is he the one that played Jim Carrey's character?
Yes,
he's.
He's
from Davenport, Iowa.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, we'll get to the prequel.
As well as the of that movie where no one can talk.
That's true. That's fair.
Quiet.
I'll let you go here, buddy.
Hi, Andrew. Love you too. You're amazing.
See you guys later.
Thank you for joining us, buddy.
Of course. Take care. Thanks for having me. Have a good weekend.
You too. Happy birthday.
Is it even worth continuing with Andrew gone? I mean, I'm worth nothing. I'm literally worth nothing.
Just cut it now.
All I brought was here.
What do you guys think? The only thing I let us know in the chat. Should Andrew... Well, Nick, let's talk about let's talk about Andrew. I did not see the prequel. Apparently it follows the story of the Norwegians, and we get to see their story play out, and it's one of these Rogue One-esque sort of movies where we see it play out, and then the final moments of the prequel lead right into the first moments of the 1982 thing. So it's cool. It's a cool idea. It's a cool concept, you know, but it kind of demystifies the whole nature of it all, in my opinion. And here's the other thing. The prequel was all CGI. They did practical effects for everything. And the practical effects looked amazing. I watched a behind the scenes of it. I haven't seen the actual prequel, but I watched a behind the scenes.
That's practical effects.
I know, seriously. They were incredible, and they wanted to do it to pay homage to the original. And then, of course, the hands of the executives and the producers at Universal got their tentacles around it and said, "We don't like it. It looks too 80s and retro." And this is before the 80s was cool again. And they changed everything to CGI, and it was horrendous.
You know, something that I was having this conversation with my wife because she just worked. She worked something that was, my wife does events. It's almost it. But anyway, they were honoring a filmmaker that we all like a lot. And something I like about that filmmaker is that the blending of CGI and practicals, I will go to my fucking grave standing by that they are the best thing to watch. And I understand doing a prequel and wanting to smooth things out with CGI, because CGI is great for that, right? When you watch something like Hellboy, right, which has all these practical effects to it, or Cabinet of Curiosities, if you like that kind of stuff, things can get smoothed out with CGI and look great. But there is something about practicals that are really tangible. And for a movie like this, right, where what makes that alien so great, it feels real. Or even because Stan Winston, right? Go to the original Jurassic Park. That shit holds up because it is this really nice mix of practicals and CGI. So I think that, like, making that choice, I get it. I understand. And CGI has come a long way and you can do cool stuff with it. But when you can use practicals, I really think that it allows your film to stand up more. It's one of my biggest things with, like, the Star Wars prequels. Like, when I watch them, is, like, it's so overly CGI'd and green screened that, like, you feel it because it doesn't age. Whereas, like, you watch Jurassic Park, where obviously not all of it aged perfectly, but shit holds up. And the thing's the same way. Like, even the stuff that doesn't look real, like when they use, like, a stuffed dog or animatronic dog and some of that in the scene where the dogs are getting just massacred. But, like, the fact that, like, that alien is so visceral in the way that it's created, it just draws you in, right? Because it's one of those things where you can, like, it sounds strange, but, like, you can feel a taste, like, you get all your senses are engaged because you don't have any disconnect by knowing it's a computer. Right. And I love CGI. CGI has made some amazing movies that I love now. Like, superhero movies are at our peak because of CGI. Like, you don't get that cool shit without CGI, but there are just things where, like, sometimes it's better to just create it. It just exactly. is. And there's magic to that.
There is. Yeah. And it's a magic we don't see that often anymore. We did see a lot of it, I would say, in stuff like the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah. And they hold the fuck up.
They hold up so well. But then you get to the Hobbit trilogy and it's all CGI because they just didn't have time. And right. they got rid of everything. All the costumes, all the props.
Well, and Peter Jackson was supposed to direct it. So that also makes sense.
That's a whole other story. I know. Yeah. Well, while we're on effects, I've got three quick clips that I want to run through with you, if that's cool, buddy, because I know you got to get going too.
Yeah, I got about another 20 minutes. So
okay, perfect. That's all I need, if even that. Here's a clip of John Carpenter. Yeah. Here's a clip of John Carpenter talking about the effects in The Thing. I did want to play this.
The Thing can look like anything. It doesn't have to look like one creature. It could look like every life form it's imitated throughout the universe because it's been on its travels for a long, long time. So it was a chance to create a monster that was design-based and based on the movement we can give it and based on some really crazy kind of offbeat ideas. I don't know that there's been a monster done like this.
Yeah, there has been. This movie, just everything about it, I'm so happy I finally have been introduced to it.
It's a masterclass in filmmaking. It really is. I mean, I wish, like, yeah. This is where I wish we still had Andrew as someone who is, like, a behind the camera creator. He's a writer too, but, like, you know, a director. It just, like you said, my only pet peeve was the three person thing. I was just like, why would you not be traveling with three people? And that's kind of being nitpicky. I was like, what can I nitpick about this?
If that's the gripe, then you're doing pretty damn good.
That's my gripe. It was like, you're drinking a lot, which I guess I get, but I was just like, travel in threes. But like the pacing, the character, the everything that's tangible about it, just what he said. Like, one of the things I love, you know, following Somewhere in the Skies or listening to the stuff you do from my perspective, like, and looking at, like, Aliens, right, is I love when it's just fucking out of the box, right? Because when it's not like a gray or something that is really that we can really connect with as humans, we're like, oh, we recognize that and we can, like, it's humanoid and we can contextualize it, which is what you see a lot of aliens in pop culture, video games, movies. Like, that's how they do it because it's relatable, I guess. I don't know. Maybe that's not the right term. This is where I'm out over my skis.
It fits into our box of comprehension.
Right. Thank you. And so I love, especially what Carpenter's saying, like, where you have a monster, like an alien that is a monster that is just so far beyond anything that we can even, like, understand. I think that the creature creation in this does that so well by just being almost nonsensical. Like, there's fucking dog heads popping
it's
out.
It's ridiculous. And, like, yeah. Well, and it plays into the biological aspect too. Like, it's trying to replicate cells, and clearly, you know, it's having, excuse me, guys, I apologize. I'm still getting over the, you know what, not the thing, the other thing, biologically, like, it's trying to replicate, impersonate, and it's having kind of a hard time doing that. So that's why you're getting, like, the dog popping out and also, like, the head of one of the guys. And it's just, like, It's like AI. It's trying to self-learn as it's replicating.
It's brilliant.
And that's grotesque. It's brilliant. It's disgusting. It's beautiful. It's
And with this film in general, like, this is the thing that I really appreciate. And, you know, I appreciate about this with almost everything I've watched from John Carpenter, like, as I move through his library, as I, you know, watch films. Because I think we've talked about this with Andrew when he's been here. Like, Halloween is still, like, a pinnacle for scary movies for me. Like, it is my, like, foundational horror movie. The one that I will always go back to. Like, that is what did it for me. And what I love about, and he mentions, like, his stories are complex, but yet they're so very simple, right? So that thing, like, the thing can be anything because it's a thing. And so that allows him as a filmmaker and the people that are creating this film around him to just go fucking crazy. And, like, it really it unlocks this, like, it gets them out of that box. And I think it's beautifully executed. And then within that, everything else in the story is simple, right? Like, it is people trapped in a remote location, in a small area, in a very, where, like, it's person, like, we talk about themes and storytelling, right? It's person against environment. It's person against a thing, like an exterior force, and people against people. And so it's such, he hits on all these themes of storytelling that we look at when we study theater, right? Beautifully. Cause you have people fighting people, and you have people doing things that make that conflict worse, drinking or having internal conflict, or people who are just in general, like McCurdy.
Like, yeah.
He's not the person you want to put in charge. Like, everything about him when they set that story, like, this is not the dude you want in charge. He's already at his wit's end coming into this. And so it just sets all these forces in motion before you're even dealing with, like, the monster, right? And so I think that Carpenter does that so beautifully. And, like, he does it in Halloween. He does it in The Thing. I mean, it's always, like, these very simplistic stories built upon tension, built upon people fighting against different things in their environment. But he never overcomplicates things. And I think that works so well in this film. There are so many questions that just don't need to be answered.
Yeah.
And I think he just does it. It's great.
He does it. And he does it at the end too, leaving it so ambiguous that, you know, people left the theater pissed. And others are like, oh, that was brilliant. Timing is something we brought up earlier in the conversation, the context of the time, the AIDS epidemic, this, that. When The Thing came out in theaters, it was the same week, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe like a week difference, with E.T. Steven Spielberg's, you know, blockbuster film of a very lovable alien and his little buddy. And then you have this come out, this thing, this extremely dark, desolate, nihilistic, like I said earlier, film that takes a different approach to the whole alien thing. So you had these two competing things. I keep using the word thing. I apologize.
Guys. Ryan, when did First Encounters come out? When is First Encounters in this timeline?
Oh, gosh. That is a very good question. I don't know the answer
to that. That's 70s, right? Like late 70s?
I want to say late 70s, like 78, 79 maybe. So someone will definitely correct me in the chat.
I would love to know. So that's interesting to me. Is you have things like First Encounter, and then you have this movie, like this idea of aliens and like how we approach it differently too. Because even within E.T., there's aspects of horror. I mean, I think about, like, I just watched it with my son like 5 months ago. Like when E.T. dies, right? Like E.T.'s kind of scary. Like E.T.'s, that movie's
there's some
scary,
moments isn't it? When he throws the ball into the, you know, he throws the ball and then the ball comes back. It's like pinnacle horror right there. But then you've got some moments. It was more of a family friendly film.
I wonder what the connection of doing these like 77. Thank you, Grant. Wonder why thematically that was carrying over. Cause that's to me very telling. You have these three two from the same director, right? Dealing with this idea of space and aliens and something coming to us, right? I don't know. Sorry. I'm spinning.
No.
I think that's interesting. I think it's a very interesting thing to think about thematically.
It is. And again, I it is thematically. And I think Carpenter did that so brilliantly. But clearly audiences did not want that at the time. I have a clip of Carpenter talking about how poorly the thing was received, which is insane that all three of us love this movie. It's considered like a masterpiece by many.
It is a perfect
like, people. Yeah.
The only other perfect horror film I can think of that did a genre perfectly, if you want Insidious. Insidious is another horror movie that I think like nails its fucking genre of like haunted house type genre, like nails it. And this nails like an alien monster movie. Nails it.
Yeah,
like,
sci-fi horror movie.
Yeah.
Let me play this clip. This was Carpenter talking about, you know, many years later how the film was received. And it didn't bomb. Let's say that first of all. It made $19 million in the box office against a $15 million budget.
So it's like Black Adam.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So it didn't bomb.
So I can bring up DC movies.
Yeah. Critically and audience-wise, it just was people hated the thing back then.
That's crazy.
Let's watch this clip.
Yeah.
Over the years, people have asked me about the thing because on its release, it was not particularly successful with audiences or fans, but years later, because of home video and so forth, it got to be known a little bit better. But my reaction, I was pretty stunned by it at the time because I'd made a really grueling, dark film, and I just don't think audiences in 1982 wanted to see that. They wanted to see E.T. And the thing was the opposite of that. The thing that disturbed me about it was that the fans turned out hating it so much. There was a famous magazine back then called Cine Fantastique, which was loved and hated by various directors, and they had a cover, a story that said, "Is this the most hated film of all time?" Which didn't do a lot to assuage my ego, but I'm very proud of the movie. I've always loved it. It's one of my favorite of my own films.
That is heartbreaking to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, he is so proud of it, and it was so hated when it came out. It astounds me. It absolutely does. I mean, the reviews were terrible. And until like we got out of the idea of like Spielberg and these, which you see in my background here, some serials I have. You don't have this lovey-dovey feel.
Well, Grant brought up a good point too. This is coming off of Alien too, which is interesting, right?
But didn't think about that. Yeah,
I mean, Alien is also fucking great. I can't lie. I can't lie. Alien is also fucking fantastic, but it's a different incredible. Kind of horror film. It's a different, it's a different beast, right? But maybe that's two of the two. I don't know. I can't fathom it. Like watching it now, I don't understand what you would like about this movie.
Yeah.
I just don't.
I think a lot of it came down to timing. It really was the time the movie released and what it was going up against. You hear that all the time when movies come out with like a Marvel blockbuster and they just tank, and it has a lot to do with your release date. And then it has a lot to do with those, writing these reviews and whatnot. And he just got ripped apart. I mean, to the point where dude, like he says this film ruined his career. He was never taken as seriously after this movie came out, and people thought, you know, he this was it. Like he had his one shot and he was done. So
I wonder, now that I'm thinking about this, like I wonder too, like the only thing I could point to, and this is something that like I think we appreciate, right? I think people probably appreciate it, you know, is because the thing is so, the actual monster in this movie is so non-corporeal. I mean, it is corporeal, but like it's so, I'm trying to find a word. Like, it's not a set thing. I keep using the word thing. It's not a set being, right? It is this, like, really, like, it changes all the time. It's not this, like an alien. Like, if you look at the other horror movie that Grant brought up, like, you have Alien, right? Like, Alien, like, you understand what that monster is. You see that monster makes sense. You can understand what it is to fear it and fight it and, like, you can get into that mindset, right? Or if you even look at, like, E.T., which is not a horror movie, but like that alien makes sense and this alien does not, which is what I think is fucking brilliant about it. But like there's no, like it doesn't, it's so outside of our concept of what it is as what it is of something to fight or be in contention with that I wonder if that comes into play, is it's like, well, this is so fucking out there that it doesn't even make sense to us as a storytelling apparatus at the time. Because like, it doesn't make sense that Alien would be so successful, but then this wouldn't, right? Because again, I will stand by, I mean, you can all hate me now. I will take Sigourney Weaver's main character over Kurt Russell. I think she's a better written character. But aside from that, Kurt Russell is great. But there's just like a less, because I think he's doing something a little more complicated. Like Sigourney Weaver is like, she's a pinnacle hero, right? Like you put her into that. She's an underdog. It makes her a pinnacle hero. Even if she is still those themes, right? Fighting against an alien, fighting against place, and fighting against people, right? She still has the same three themes, but she is so likable and so well written. I mean, she's one of the best. Ripley is one of the best written female action characters when we look at this genre, in my opinion. So she's so easy to root for. And like Kurt Russell's character just isn't. I like him. He's charismatic, but it's not the same kind of like hero. He's not the same kind of hero. Then put up against a non like understandable villain, right? I think it's almost like too smart in some ways. Or maybe that's part of it. Like, it's harder to like, to engage with it in the same way. You're muted.
You were just having a conversation with yourself. No, what I meant to say is I agree with you. I think it went over people's heads. It was ahead of its time. You had like kind of the tail end of the Cold War happening still. And like that could have played into it too. Like this fear of like, you know, the Red Scare, blah, 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 blah. There's so many ways you could put this movie in the context of why it worked and why it didn't. And I think that's what any good film does.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, like people in the chat said, we're still talking about the thing today.
Yeah.
And I mean, people like me are just getting introduced to it.
And that it holds up, right? That as a film.
Oh, God.
It still holds up. And I think that's
this is insane. Better than 99% of the horror movies out there right now. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. I mean, you rewatch. I remember, again, my brother was like, you've got to watch it. So I'm like, okay. You know, because he loves his 80s movies. Like, my brother's like a true child of the 80s. And so,
yeah.
And he's got good taste, in my opinion. So, you know, I watch it and I'm like, oh, yeah, this shit. Like, sometimes I'll watch, like, he's like, you got to watch Fright Night. And I was like, oh, yeah, Fright Night's okay. Like, it's okay. Like, right. You know,
yeah.
I get why you liked it. Like, I like it, but like this one, I was like, no, this shit holds up. This shit is like Andrew said, like it just, you rewatch it. I watched it again and had a whole different, like, I was like, wait, you know, like my mind started like spinning on who is the first person to be the alien. But there's right. All these things that Carpenter does, which we've talked about, that I think just aren't utilized in film. The scene fade outs, right? That's another thing that just, where I think we appreciate it, we're like, oh, that's great, especially as people who have theater backgrounds. But I could see someone watching that and being like, that's stupid. Why'd that's you do dumb. That?
Exactly. Yeah. It's interesting. Well, you know who did love this movie? Two people. The first one we're going to briefly go through is Chris Carter of The X-Files, so much so that he made an episode of The X-Files titled Ice, which, dude, if you haven't watched it, go watch it. Were you an X-Files fan? I don't know if I've
yes, but not like you. X-Files scared the shit out of me. So I was like, I watched it like with bated breath.
Okay. They did an episode called Ice. It was in the first season, I believe. And it was an homage to this film. I want to play a quick promo of when that episode originally released. I think it was back in 1993.
Deep beneath the Arctic Circle, an ancient terror sleeps.
Nothing can survive for 250,000 years.
Waking it was their first mistake. Trying to stop it could be their last. The X-Files. Don't watch it alone.
Put it down!
Friday at 9, 8 Central.
Those dude, teasers are the how much do you miss that Friday at 9, 8
Central? Oh, love it.
Don't watch it alone. One of the best episodes of The X-Files, but clearly, like, down to the dog, down to, like, the Antarctic sort of feel to it. Just a total homage to it. I highly suggest people check it out.
We mentioned just how, like, fucking, so sorry, not an X-Files note. Just how fucking good Gillian Anderson is. Like, that woman has come into her own. Like, I think when that show ended, people were like, so oh, she, and now you're like, no, she's fucking brilliant.
Sorry. She's incredible.
I also have a big crush on her, so I have a talent crush and an actual crush. Don't tell me.
Who doesn't?
My
who
wife
doesn't?
Does too, it's fine.
Even, she was even like, she was even pretty, not bad looking as Margaret Thatcher, too.
So she's good in every, well, that's thing when they did, she played Eleanor Roosevelt. I'm like, she's too pretty to be Eleanor Roosevelt. That woman,
yeah.
Nothing against Eleanor Roosevelt. Right. Brilliant woman. But like, historically was not a looker.
Yeah.
And she just is. I don't know what to tell you.
She did it.
She's just
we could get to a whole episode on Gillian Anderson.
We should. Our talent crush, Gillian Anderson.
Bring back the X-Files, Ian says. That voiceover too was great. I love it. Nick, how much more time do you have, buddy?
I got like 5 minutes. You got me for five.
Okay. I got you for five. Perfect. Yeah, five. One more clip from our very good friend who absolutely loved this movie. We didn't have him tonight, but he did send us a message.
Is it Dennis?
It's one of his favorite movies. Oh, so I'm going to go ahead and play the clip right now.
I was hoping he'd be
Hi, there. Everyone. My name is Dennis Callow. I'm a photographer and a filmmaker, and I'm also a YouTuber now, I guess, because I make documentaries about horror films and put it up on YouTube. And one of my favorite films that I just covered, there's part one and part two that's on my channel right now, is The Thing, which is what you guys are talking about right now. And the reason why I love this movie is not just because it is a complete and total masterclass and masterpiece in filmmaking, but there's a really sad story that comes along with it. And the story of John Carpenter sort of being called a hack after this movie was made. And it's kind of incredible to think about that now, in hindsight, but there was a lot to do with time and timing, which I talk about in, my series that affected the film and that affected him as a filmmaker. Other than that, this film is just a masterclass in tension and dread and winter horror, which is my favorite type of horror. I love cold weather, and I love cold weather horror because it just adds another layer cake of tension in that. And when you get a bunch of guys in a research station in the Antarctic who have been going stir crazy with nothing but like computer chess and whiskey to keep them company, you're going to get a nice little recipe for disaster there. But it's really just a fantastic, fantastic film. I can't say enough about it, but I do say enough about it on my YouTube channel with the documentaries that I made on the film. So I hope you enjoy this discussion, and I'll give it back to Andrew, Nick, and Ryan Sprague, the king of the hour. Take care, fellow believers.
I love him.
Can I log
so much?
I'm all about log rolling people that I like. So I log rolled Andrew as a brilliant filmmaker. I log rolled Eric, who's here, as a brilliant filmmaker who I've been lucky enough to work with. Ryan and I have made a movie. That dude, Dennis, you guys go check out his stuff. Check out Ryan's podcast with him if you haven't seen that when we all chatted. He is a great man, a great filmmaker, and loves himself some horror in a beautiful way.
Absolutely.
Go check him out. Because he's great.
Go check him out. There's a link right down there, guys, in the show notes for Dennis's two-part series on The Thing. Go check it out right now.
His Halloween Part 3, which I had not seen to that, is also brilliant.
Season of the Witch, yep.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Oh.
He's an awesome guy, guys. Be on the lookout in the future for projects, maybe having to do with Dennis and Nick and myself. More to come on that.
My shirt might come off. You never know. My shirt came off in Eric's film too. You never know. I mean, really, goddamn, it does come off in everything I do.
It came off in my film too.
I know. And your sister thought I was hot, which I'll never let you forget.
Ugh, God, don't remind me.
Great shape. That's in great shape.
Nicholas Westmeyer.
Can
I know
we do
you
the
got
last one when it's over? Can we actually do that? You should nab Chris Moss too. It's his favorite video game.
Absolutely. I got to go watch it. I'm probably going to watch that next.
I'm just going to message you about doing a side thing.
Okay.
This should be monthly. Right, guys? Chat? Should it be monthly? It should be monthly, right?
Should we do a monthly movie review, guys?
Yeah,
Look at his face. Look at that face.
Look at that face.
You know what would get us some super chats? Take that vest off, Mr. Westermeyer, if you will.
My flannel for you. I got the same
looking good, buddy. Looking wintry. I love it. Hey, before we go, any last words on The Thing that you want to leave the audience with tonight?
I can't sound as smart as Andrew or you. I think it's a great film. I think I really do. I agree with everything that Dennis said. We use the word masterclass a lot, and I mean that. Like it is a damn near perfect horror film in what it is. Like in the genre that it's doing and what it's trying to accomplish, it stands up really well. It was enjoyable in multiple viewings, which I always think is another thing about horror films. If you can go back and rewatch a horror film when you know the plot points that are happening and it's still good, that's when you know it's well done. Because horror that doesn't have rewatchability, not that it's not enjoyable in the moment, but I think doesn't have that same lasting impact. And this definitely is one that like you can keep going back and revisiting and like picking out stuff and making like thoughts about and trying to figure out what's happening. And I think it just in that way, the fact that John Carpenter is not considered, I mean, I know he is, but that anyone would ever think he's a hack blows my mind. There's like one John Carpenter movie I don't like. And I should go back and rewatch it just to make sure that's true.
Well, and this film makes me want to go back and watch everything he's done. I haven't seen that many. I've seen the Halloweens, and that's about it. I've seen Vampires, which is a whole...
That's the one where I was like, I need to go back. Like when I first watched, I was like, what the...
I'm sure I would find some stuff to appreciate about it. I heard The Fog is really good, so I got to check that out.
Yeah, check that out too.
I haven't seen They Live, which I heard is another brilliant, brilliant film as well. So I'll definitely have to go check those out. But Nick, where can people check out everything you're up to, buddy? And give us any updates.
So for me, you can find me primarily on Instagram, which is @NWestemeyer. I'm on Facebook and Twitter. I'm very not active on Twitter. And Facebook I'm active on, but you know, but Instagram is probably best. Also for my own log rolling, Somewhere in the Skies, if you want to check out the movie Ryan and I worked on, please do. It's on his YouTube page and also on what's that site?
Vimeo,
that one. It was something that we spent a lot of time, a lot of love on. But also I love baking. So if you like baked goods, and then Voyage Theater Company, which is a New York based theater company that I'm a part of, that's always producing new works. And Ryan and I have worked with them before. So go over, give them a like on Facebook. We'd love to have you, but yeah, Instagram is where it's at.
Absolutely. Yes. Voyage Theater Company was such a pleasure working with you guys. And Nick and I come from a theater background, and The Thing is a straight up play, my opinion, which I appreciated so much about it. It's 12 Angry Men in the Antarctic.
In space with a giant alien monster. They can eat.
Yeah. What else can you ask for?
Or your head. Yes. All right, guys. I have to go be a Nick, parent now.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you for having me, Ryan. You're great. All the people who came, thank you so much. Keep looking up. Is that what it is?
That it's, you got it, buddy.
Oh, thanks. You can find me on your podcast when I was doing voices.
Absolutely. You'll hear Nick very soon in some upcoming episodes as well. Thank you, my friend. I always appreciate your time, value your opinions, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me. Bye, everyone.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
And then there was one. My huge special thanks to Nick and Andrew, both fathers, and have a lot going on. It's still a little early on the East Coast where they are. So they got kids, they got stuff to do, but they gave us their time tonight to talk about The Thing. And I'm just going to say it. This is now one of my favorite horror movies. I absolutely loved it from start to finish. Everything about it, the writing, the direction, the special effects, practical effects, I should say. It's just a brilliant, brilliant film. I don't understand why it wasn't received at the time as well, but it is now. And sometimes that's what happens with movies. They don't really gain traction or get their legs until decades later, when you can take it out of the time that it was made in and when it was released and all that stuff and look at it with new, fresh eyes. And that's what we did tonight for you guys. I hope you enjoyed this review of The Thing. This will be a film I go to every winter now to watch. So there's that. I do want to share a few things before I let you guys go here tonight. See if I can pull this up. This was a poster that Grant Levac in the chat made. Grant, I cannot thank you enough, buddy, for being here tonight. I know it's really late or early in Australia right now. So thank you for being here, man. And thanks for making this fun little poster with me taking over as the helicopter pilot. I absolutely love it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And to let you guys know about what's coming up on Somewhere in the Skies, we have a new episode airing this Monday. It's going to be a brand new episode of Witness Accounts, where you, the listeners, call in and tell us your UFO stories. And we have We got some good stories coming your way in that episode, guys, coming to you Monday. We have a other UFO podcast host that a lot of you are familiar with telling their UFO story on the show for the very first time. We also have a Navy serviceman who had 5 different triangular UFO sightings over a naval base in California. So be on the lookout for that episode coming to you this Monday. It is available right now for our Apple Premium subscribers and our Patreon subscribers. So if you want to hear that episode early, you can do that right now at patreon.com/somewhereskies, or you can become an Apple Premium subscriber. You just go to your Apple feed and it should be right at the top. You just click subscribe and it should take you there to get the early edition of this episode and bonus episodes. I'm dropping a ton of new bonus episodes over on Apple subscriber premium and also at Patreon. So check those out. Excuse me. Again, guys, still getting over COVID. So it's been rough. I'm not going to lie, but I had to do this tonight. And let's see, what else do we have? Operation Saucer and the UFO Island will be our episode the following week, where we travel to Brazil to look at a ton of UFO cases in Brazil. And on the Patreon and Apple Premium subscriber feed, we'll have a bonus episode called The Mystery of the Lead Masked Ufologists. A crazy, crazy mystery that happened in Brazil that involved UFOs and 2 gentlemen who were unfortunately found dead. And who went to investigate this case? None other than Jacques Vallée. So that episode should be premiering on the bonus feeds on Patreon and Apple very soon. So be on the lookout for that. And I think that's it, guys. I think that's all I have for you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on this very special edition movie review of The Thing here at Somewhere in the Skies. Thank you for joining us. Thank you to our super chats. I really appreciate the support, guys. All of the money that you donate to the show goes right back into making it bigger and better and everything in between. So that is always appreciated. Again, if you want to support the show, you can do that in the super chat. You can become a YouTube member below, or you can join our Patreon and our Apple subscribers. My special thanks to Nick and to Andrew. And I'm going to leave you with a little funny clip that I put together here for you guys. And other than that, I'm just going to say, as always, keep your feet on the ground, but never stop searching somewhere in the skies for the thing.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.